90.3.
This is New York's FM. Now, I am delighted to welcome to Northside today Austin Keenan. Austin was a good Irish boy. He went to school, did his studies, went to college and qualified as an accountant, no less. And having done all that and made Mammy proud, what did he do? He decided this wasn't for him and he joined Concern as an NGO and has since been to the Sudan, Kenya, Sierra Leone and Gambia. Good morning, Austin, and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Donny. Thanks for having me on.
It is quite the resume you have, Austin. You know, it's a lot of people have, I suppose, I don't know, maybe an ideology or something like that, and I'm probably not phrasing it properly, but they have this ideology and maybe an epiphany when they're in college and they decide that this is what they want to do. But no, you went down the academic route, qualified as an accountant, and then decided, nah, after all that, this isn't for me, and you went on to join Concern. Tell me why you did that in the beginning, Austin.
Yes, now, it was a bit of a longer route, shall I put it, than that. I did study commerce in University College Dublin, and then after that I was wondering actually what to do, and I did go to APSO, which was a volunteer sending agency in the Department of Foreign Affairs at the time. It doesn't exist anymore. And I had a chat with them and I said, you know, I'd be interested in doing something in another country. And then they said, well, you know, you've just qualified and what are you planning to do? And I was a little bit of sixes and sevens then. And they actually mentioned, they said, oh, you know, accountants are always in demand. So that was actually in the back of my mind. Now, then I did go into the accountancy area and I kind of qualified in Britain, actually. I was emigrated there. And then I worked in private companies for a while. And then I had the lucky chance to end up in Amnesty International. I worked as an accountant there. And then a few other jobs later, I went back to APSO. And I went, actually, first of all, with APSO to the Gambia, as you mentioned. And I was working in the field of microfinance there. So kind of that was, it was kind of getting me towards community development, shall we say. It was kind of, you know, the accountancy skills came in handy, but then I was also learning kind of community development skills because it was very community-based, working with women's groups in rural postal villages. And then from there, I had a few other jobs. I did come back to Ireland in the meantime, and then I was working briefly with Focus Ireland back in the accountancy field. And then from Focus Ireland, I ended up then just taking a job with Concern Worldwide, and that was about 14 years ago at this stage. So that's kind of, so it was a bit of a long-winded route around, but I got to Concern that way.
And tell me, Austin, I mean, from the, we'll say the, obviously, you're, that's your sort of your DNA, and it's in your DNA to do this, but you come home on quite a regular basis. No, okay, you're not home every second week, etc., etc.,
yeah.
And you're home now, and in fact, I suppose we should tell people that you're flying back out tomorrow to, where are you going to, Austin, again, sorry?
Going back to Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone.
I'm a country director there for Concern Worldwide.
Yeah, so you're going back to Sierra Leone tomorrow morning. And when you come back here, and this is something that I've always been fascinated with people like you, even that you may not be away for a terribly long time, as in you're not away at, you know, sort of 10 or 20 years at a time. Do you see changes in this country when you come back each time?
Well, I do and I don't, I think. You know, there's the physical changes you see. You'll say, oh, where's that building? You know, it used to be a building here and that kind of thing. But I think you do see changes. I mean, I know Ireland's been through, you know, the Celtic Tiger boom, and then we had the crash, and then we're supposedly on the up again, but of course we have a housing crisis and health crisis and all of those things going on. But, you know, so it's a mixed picture. And I suppose what strikes me actually is, you know, you sort of think, oh, Sierra Leone and Ireland, they couldn't be further more different. But actually, what strikes me is the similarities. I mean, we're talking about people who are, you know, families basically trying to make a living, struggling to make ends meet. Perhaps they've a greater struggle in some ways in Sierra Leone in that regard, but you know, there's poverty here as well. You know, community development, the principles are the same. In fact, a lot of the principles of community development here have been informed by practices in Africa. I remember years ago there were some workshops, I think, in Galway that were looking at that. It's the participatory appraisal methods and things like that. So it's actually what strikes me is almost similarities. Now, the overall economy is, you know, the Irish economy is much stronger than Sierra Leone's economy. So it's those kind of, you know, you can easily go into a cafe here, for example, and have a coffee. It's a bit less, you know, you have less facilities like that there. You know, there's, you know, transport or other things. Probably less developed, though they've actually come a long way. The main roads are pretty well developed. Health education facilities, you know, much weaker there. So, you know, there's more opportunity here because of, you know, we're better, we're lucky to be better off in that regard. So I suppose those are the main differences. But actually, what actually strikes me is the similarities.
And that's exactly why I was asking you the question, Austin, because, I mean, when a lot of people think of and we'll just talk about Sierra Leone for the moment, because that's where you're heading back to tomorrow. Like, a lot of people would think of that as being a war-torn country, and, you know, you will never be told officially, like, where the Irish Army Rangers are, but we are given to understand that there is a team of Irish Army Rangers in Sierra Leone at the moment, and that it is a pretty dangerous country. But, I mean, you know, when you look at, and I leaving the housing crisis out of it for the moment, which is a crisis, but I mean the health service in Ireland at the moment is particularly in the spotlight, and one would think that even as bad as it is, that it would be in a much, much better place than the one in Sierra Leone, and yet there's the similarities that we were talking about, Austin.
Yeah, well, let me just respond first of all to, you know, do a little plug for Sierra Leone, shall we say, in general. People often think of Sierra Leone as war-torn, but actually there is no conflict in Sierra Leone. It is actually a very safe country. You know, the conflict in Sierra Leone ended in 2000, and the country has managed to stay peaceful since then. They do have a small British Army detachment there, but really, you know, the UN forces have left that were there. I'm not familiar with the Irish Army having any presence in Sierra Leone myself, but could be wrong on that. But I'm not familiar with that. But really, it's being run totally by, you know, it has its own government. They had a peaceful election last year and a peaceful change of government. So conflict isn't an issue in Sierra Leone. Now, they are, you know, it's an extremely poor country, and as you mentioned, health. They had a really bad fortune and tragedy to suffer the Ebola crisis. That was between 2014 and 2000 and the beginning of 2016, which affected Sierra Leone, Liberia, and the Republic of Guinea, and that really devastated the health system because they lost a lot of doctors and nurses and other qualified people who were in the front lines responding to that. Now, the country did, you know, with international help, they did manage to defeat the Ebola virus, and you know, it's Ebola free at present, and hopefully it'll stay that way. I suppose just in terms of the health in particular, and I suppose the similarity and difference, you know, the differences are stark. I mean, you know, health facilities are much better here in terms of what, you know, the resources and what's actually available, and when you're in the system, of course, you'll get much stronger care, shall we say, down in Sierra Leone. But I mean, again, you know, the issues of access, you know, the overcrowding here and things like that. I mean, you have that there. It's probably starker in a country like Sierra Leone, where they literally don't have the resources that we'd have here. But the similarities are, you know, people going into the public system there, you know, they would suffer more, shall we say, than here. But you would have some similarities in that regard. One of our biggest programs actually in Sierra Leone is working with the Ministry of Health, because what we've recognised is it's really, you know, the best role that an organisation like Concern can do is to actually work with government and other partners in a country and actually help assist them in their efforts to strengthen their systems. And that's really our focus at the moment, actually, in the whole health area. We're in a consortium of other NGOs, led by IRC, and we are a key partner in that as Concern Worldwide, and we're working across three districts of Sierra Leone and working closely with both district level and national level Ministry of Health personnel and structures to, you know, basically improve the quality of the work. You know, it could be through training, there's some material provision, you know, fuel and other logistics support as well, but and materials, but the emphasis really is on training and building capacity of, you know, frontline health professionals and trying to help them build back their capacity after, shall we say, the war and the Ebola crisis.
And Austin, do you find that officialdom in these countries, and I mean at the very start of our chat, I listed out four or five countries that you have been in and worked in over the last, I think you said 14 years. Do you generally find that when you go to these countries, okay, I mean, you've obviously a relationship built up with people in these countries, but when you go there first, and I'm just taking, maybe we'll just use the example again of Sierra Leone, but I want to broaden it out. I don't want to concentrate totally on Sierra Leone. But did you find that when you went there first that you had no problem engaging with officialdom, or did you find that they were a bit suspicious of you, or did you find that they welcomed you with open arms?
I suppose, like in any country, it's about building relationships. I mean, in principle, the government of Sierra Leone and other governments, indeed, they recognise and welcome the role of NGOs like Concern in supplementing their own or complementing their own efforts. They recognise that they don't have all the resources they need. So they do, in that sense, there's a kind of a welcome in principle. Now, like that, there would be an element of, you know, how can we control these NGOs? I mean, there's often a great number of them. And of course, they would like NGOs to be working in alignment with their own policies and strategies. And that's, you know, in principle, it's reasonable. So sometimes there's a bit of a tension there because, like, we would be very much community-focused, etc. Whereas government, okay, they have that perspective. But, you know, like everywhere, governments are a bit top-down. And so that's not their, shall we say, their easiest way of working. So you'll get a kind of a tension there. And, you know, and again, it's about relationships between individuals and institutions, and there's good times and there's bad times and that. So, you know, at the moment, in fact, we're working very quite closely with the government in Sierra Leone. They're introducing a new development cooperation framework, like an NGO policy, and we're trying to engage with that. Now, we don't agree with everything in it, and we have open discussions with them about that, but at the same time, we're trying to work with it in a positive way, so that we, you know, it's all about building that relationship.
And of course,
so, you know, it'll be similar to here in that. Going back to similarity, I mean, I think Irish NGOs, you know, also engaging with government here, you know, sometimes it's you know, there's a positive relationship in principle, but there will be disputes or disagreements and, you know, pushing back here and there, that kind of thing. So, and it would be similar in these countries. Now, when you're talking about countries, just to widen it out, you know, when you're talking about countries really affected by conflict, then it can be more acute. And then sometimes governments, you know, there could be politics could come into it, and then they could be quite suspicious of NGOs, like what are we there for? You know, are we representing outside interest? That kind of thing. But we're not seeing that in Sierra Leone. Like, Sierra Leone is really a development context now. It's really very much about addressing extreme poverty as opposed to kind of emergency crisis, which is probably about half of Concern's work. Like, Concern since 1968, it started out as a humanitarian emergency organisation, but now it's probably 50% 50. You know, we'd have a huge amount of emergency work, but also a similar amount of longer-term development work in health, education, you know, livelihoods, both in urban areas and rural areas, and work on, you know, HIV/AIDS and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and of course, I suppose the obvious thing as well, Austin, is that the whole ethos is you leave a country or an area in a better condition than what you found it in.
Yes, I mean, that certainly is the ethos. Now, you know, I won't hide from you, this is the long-term perspective. I mean, we certainly don't see ourselves leaving Sierra Leone in a few years. It is going to be a long-term engagement, but overall, we're about putting ourselves out of work at the end of it, but it's taking a long time. And I mean, as we know from our own experience, development isn't something that happens in a few years. It takes quite a long time. And, you know, again, going back to similarities, if you look at history, I mean, Sierra Leone was a colony under Great Britain. Ireland was a colony under Great Britain. There's a lot of similar shared histories in that respect. There was a big Irish engagement in Sierra Leone, you know, the missionaries, and then, you know, currently with organisations like Concern, Gold and Knox and Troker are all there. then, you know, you have poverty, you know, you have conflict, you know, we have that shared experience as well. So it's kind of a different thing, but in a, when you look at it overall, there's actually a lot of similarities. And there's a very, there's a good organisation here called Sierra Leone Ireland Partnership, which is actually, I should mention it because we do link in with it a lot quite here, and it's actually made up of, you know, a mixture of Sierra Leoneans in Ireland and also Irish people who have lived and worked in Sierra Leone, and they kind of keep that connection going, and they play a very important advocacy role with the Irish government. I mean, Ireland now has a full embassy in Sierra Leone, very active one actually, and you know that's been there for now a few years. So Ireland is playing quite a very positive role in Sierra Leone.
Austin, what's the most dangerous place in the world you worked?
Now, I suppose just to clarify, at the moment, like I'm based in, I live and work in Sierra Leone, whereas the countries I visited before, I visited as a regional director and before that a desk officer. So I was actually visiting and supporting other country programs. So I suppose, well, I've been to nearly all of the Horn of Africa countries, so Somalia, Ethiopia, visited Eritrea once, Kenya, the Republic of Sudan and South Sudan, Chad, been in Chad, Niger, and then West Africa, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and then Malawi and Zambia and Mozambique in Southern Africa. So quite a lot of countries. What's the most dangerous? I mean, I suppose I visited Somalia a few times, so I suppose in some ways Somalia might be, but actually it was interesting when I was there, it varied. One time I was there, it had actually become very, this was some years ago, it had actually, you know, the conflict had died down significantly, and then sadly it kind of blew up again. Probably Somalia, maybe South Sudan would be the ones, but generally speaking, you know, we have very, as an NGO, we have very good staff security procedures, so. And it's very much built around community acceptance. And again, what you mentioned about, you know, engaging with whatever government and other structures are there and trying to really push this, which is more difficult in the current world we live in, but really trying to push the fact that we're neutral and independent and we're not on one side or the other. But as I say, it's more difficult to actually put that across. But I've never really felt afraid as such, which might seem an odd thing in some of these contexts, but just because of the people that we're working with there. I mean, some really inspirational people in the likes of Somalia, and that, you know, they really can teach us a thing or two. And I think that is, working with people like that has kind of never, you know, it's made me feel safe when I visit.
Yeah, because I was just wondering, Austin, like, you know, I mean, as you say, you're living now and working and you're basing yourself in Sierra Leone, and, you know, you've explained like that is it tremendously in a terribly safe place now, and it's a changed country completely. And then you go to somewhere where, you know, we'll say the likes of Somalia, you know, do you change your mindset? And this is what I'm trying to come at, really, and I suppose it's a very difficult question, but, you know, you leave Sierra Leone to go, we'll say for argument's sake, to Somalia, and you're there to do good work and you're there to help the people, but yet you may not be received in the same way as you would hope. Do you have to change your mindset on that flight and psych yourself up, or do you just go and say, look, I'm here to do a job and I'm putting my faith in the people that are here to protect me while I'm here doing it, and just forget about the conflict and forget about the danger?
Yeah, no, good question. I suppose just to clarify again, just my current role doesn't take me into other countries because I'm actually...
Oh, no, I'm not saying that, Austin, but I say when it did take you there, that's what I'm coming
at. Oh, sorry, yeah, okay. Yes, no, the... I mean, I suppose as a regional director, I had a portfolio of six countries to oversee and to support. Now, they would be quite a mix. Like the last, those changed over time. But just to give you an example, the last set of countries ranged from Haiti to Sierra Leone, Liberia, and I had Malawi and the Republic of Sudan. So that was the last group before I took this current job. Very different countries. Okay, some similar issues, etc., but very different in a broad range of contexts. So I suppose as region director in the head office, I would be keeping, you know, I'd be keeping in touch with all of those countries on a regular basis. And a key, so, you know, if I say, okay, I'm traveling to Haiti, for example, I, as you said it there yourself, I'd kind of put myself in the zone a bit before traveling, both just, you know, the last few days before in the head office and maybe on the flight itself, and, you know, be reading all the documents, be talking to the people, and then you arrive and you're kind of in the zone for there. But you are also having to kind of keep an eye on the other countries, you know, in terms of support and that through email and all that. So you're kind of juggling things a bit. But, you know, I would, it's the reason I mentioned and emphasised the people we work with, both our staff and others. That's kind of the raison d'etre of how we do security management. It's not a, you know, it's very much around like who we work with and how we work and demonstrating what we're doing. And that's what actually makes you feel safe in these settings as much as possible. Now, in some cases, and I haven't experienced this myself really, but in some cases, you know, we'll have to withdraw people because it gets too, you know, we've had cases where we've, you know, our security procedures say, look, it's just getting too dangerous here and community acceptance, et cetera, isn't sufficient. We have, you know, maybe other groups that, you know, are just there and they're just looking at us suspiciously and something could happen. So we would then, we'll take the decision to withdraw. But that's a last resort step. And I haven't actually had to directly experience that, though I've been involved with, okay, you know, supporting where others have actually scaled down or, you know, pulled people out. So,
well, long may that continue, Austin, is all I can say. Before I let you go, Austin, and I'm very grateful to you for taking the time because I know you're probably rushing around getting organised. Talk to me a little bit about CERN. It's on the go. It's probably one of the longest established charitable organisations we have. Is it currently in a good place? Is it always there with the begging bowl out? How many staff have we? You know, just give us a little pocketbook of CERN 2020.
Yeah, no good. And, you know, and you're right, it's been around a long time. We're, I think, 51 years old at this stage. Founded in 1968 in response to the Biafra War in Nigeria. So that very much is in its DNA, is this kind of response to humanitarian emergencies, and then evolved into actually looking at many of the root causes, which then takes us into the kind of longer-term community and development works. In terms of where we're at now, we probably have about 3,000 to 4,000 staff worldwide. We're in about 24 countries. We're a strong organisation. We'd be what is classed a medium-sized NGO when you look at all the different, you know, development NGOs globally. Like, we wouldn't be at this level of World Vision or some of these very big entities. But actually, it's quite a good size because I think we have a good the culture and the mission. The mission really runs right through, and there's almost like a good culture in terms of actually pushing, you know, this focus on extreme poverty, focus on communities and engaging with them. We're really emphasizing the whole area of equality and accountability and trying to, because you can get sucked a bit into working with the groups that are more powerful in a society, even in a local community, as you know. So it's about always questioning ourselves. And one of the things I've liked about CERN and the reason I stayed is that we're always questioning ourselves, saying, is this right? Is this, you know, could we do this better? We're not just saying, oh yeah, we're great and sitting on our laurels, which is a really good thing. But no, we're in a good state. Now, you mentioned, in terms of fundraising we raise funds from the Irish public. We also have offices in Britain. We have a fundraising entity in South Korea, actually, and then also an affiliated office in the United States. So, you know, we raise funds in different places. We also raise funds from institutional donors. So the Irish government would be a major donor to CERN worldwide through the Department of Foreign Affairs, Irish Aid. And really, individual donations really are important to us because they actually in a sense, they leverage other funding, which then helps us actually implement the programs we're doing worldwide. But we have a good range of diversified funding, so we're not kind of over-dependent on one source and then potentially at risk in that regard.
Yes, so the old adage, we don't put all our eggs in the one basket.
Basically, yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Austin, it has been an absolute pleasure, and I have to say, and I hope our listeners found it as educational as I did. It was lovely to talk to you. Very, very interesting. And, you know, it's, and of course, I mean, you're a quite very, very young man, but it's a life well lived and much lived. And I think you have seen a lot of things and you have done a lot of things which bring great pride to our country, may I say. Austin Keenan from Concern, thank you for talking to me today before your imminent departure tomorrow back to Sierra Leone. Austin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much indeed.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tony, and thanks to you for your time and your interest. I mean, I think that's what kind of keeps us all going. I think the media are absolutely important, and I think thanks very much for giving us this space.
It has been our absolute pleasure. Thank you, Austin.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tony. Yeah. Have a good day there.
And you.